Hello, hello, hello. Hello, Georgians, hello, global citizens, and hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my high school best friend Damian Galvin created in June of this year to talk about issues that interest us, issues that disgust us, and issues that America needs to know about. In other words, myself and Damian created this podcast to deconstruct public policy issues of the past and the present and create a more equitable future for all of us. We have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys, but before we play this episode, we're going to give a special thank you to our sponsor, Patreon, and our wonderful team here at Politician, which includes high school juniors Jada Pilling, Yi Shen, and Julia Hartman. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoy. See you in the episode.
And now we're rolling. I keep doing that. I keep messing up the thing because my OBS is switched. Either way, I'm Damian Galvin. I'm your host here at Politician. As always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hey, guys. My name is Varun Kadathala. I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast here with Damian, where myself and Damian talk about issues of the past, deconstruct them to create a more beneficial and equal future for everybody of regardless of the race, culture, sexuality, origin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we have a very special episode today, part two of our RNC special, Republican National Convention. We're going to be covering nights two and night three of that convention. And now we have, once again, our wonderful, wonderful conservative correspondent, Will Carroll, on for another episode on the RNC. So, Will, if you'd like to introduce yourself for any of our new listeners today.
Hey, I'm Will Carroll. I'm the conservative correspondent for Politician Media, et cetera, et cetera. Let's do it.
Awesome.
Let's do it.
If you guys want to get to know Will a little bit better, I think our first episode would probably encapsulate him most.
Yeah.
Either way, let's start. I think what we're going to do here just for our viewers is going to be a little bit different format. Obviously, since it's the RNC, because I think me and Varun would just go on tangents either way. So we're going to do 5 minutes per speaker / subject. If we see maybe due time, Will's kind of going to be our timekeeper here, so that we make sure that we get the most fair representation of the RNC. If he sees due time, I think we might maybe add a minute or two max. Beyond that, we're going to try to get through as many speakers / subjects as possible. So without further ado, you want to start, Will?
I would like to start. And I'd like to start with probably one of my favorite speakers from the first night. And that is the former UN or US ambassador to the UN and the former governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley. So I noticed a lot from what she was saying is that she's a very smart woman. And she basically talked about how Biden would essentially be a puppet, and which is, it's kind of what Matt Gaetz said. We talked about on the first episode. But she said it like she, I don't remember the actual quote, but I think she essentially said Biden would be a puppet. She was talking about how Biden had literally said he was going to raise taxes on the middle class. And basically, I think she was one of the first people to highlight the flaws of America. And I quoted her saying, America isn't perfect, but the principles we hold dear are perfect. And I think that goes a lot to say about the type of person that she is and the type of leader she is. And she, I should have said this at the beginning, she opened with how in 1984, Jan Kirkpatrick was the former U.S. ambassador to the UN and under Reagan. And she was talking about how that was very... It was very similar to the situations that we're in now. So I want to gauge your perspective, guys, on just what you, I don't know if you watched Nikki Haley or what you thought of my description of Nikki Haley, but what did you guys think of that?
Well, I think Varun can start.
Yeah, we can go in the same format we had last time, Will, me, and then Damian. So personally, I watched Nikki Haley, I did. And the reason why I watched her was, first of all, I respect her. I think she's a very educated person, a very knowledgeable person. And second of all, because I'm Indian American and she's also Indian American, part of my origin. So I really relate with her. Now, I came into it and I was listening to her and it was an absolutely phenomenal speech. I think she was a very, very different kind of speaker that day on the first night. It's different from that kind of other Republican speakers that day. She was much more educated, a lot more sophisticated in her language, the way she spoke. I think overall it seemed like a more knowledgeable speech. Now, the one problem that I did have her with her and her whole speech was the fact that she kind of downplayed the amount of discrimination in our nation going on right now. And the reason why I say that is because in the very beginning of her speech, I don't know if you guys saw, but Nikki Haley said that, I'm going to pull up this quote. She said that, here, I'm finding it right now.
Is it America is not a racist country?
Yeah. She said America is not racist, right? And then minutes later, she said, I've experienced racism. My family has experienced racism. She's a daughter of a brown family. I was a brown girl in a black and white world. We face discrimination and hardship. Just minutes after she said America is not a racist nation. Now, I think that shows that Nikki Haley is definitely playing to an audience who doesn't want to be called bigots, doesn't want to be called racists, and want to believe in America that doesn't promote xenophobia or racism. But the reality of it is that America, by their nature, we've seen it in Forsyth County where we live. We've seen it across Georgia, across the nation, that it really does promote racism in some circumstances. And you see that everywhere. I've seen it myself as a minority. I know Damien has. We talked about it on the podcast before. So I think that by saying America isn't racist, that itself is really alienating a lot of voters. Now, to your point, Will, she was a great speaker. I think to the Republican side, she definitely made some amazing points against Biden and to say that he's a puppet for the radical left. The issue I had with her, and one of the sole issues I had with her, is the fact that she downplayed the concerns of many, many, many Americans and maybe even minority supporters of Trump, who, as you saw, he was trying to get during the whole RNC. We saw black supporters. We saw Native American supporters. We saw Indian, like Nikki Haley supporters. It was a very diverse population in some circumstances. And I think her speech did more to alienate them than it did to gain that vote. Thoughts, Damien?
I disagree. I think that she represented a true Republican speaker in every sense. Where I agree with you on is the fact of the alienation, but I do not think that she alienated in her speech. I think that the context of her speech alienated. And what I mean by that is the fact that we just had, you know, Jacob Blake be shot earlier this week. We had, you know, the gruesome murder of George Floyd earlier this year. I think if she would have given the speech in 2016, this would have been a true representation of the Republican Party. And to say that, it is, right? It is a true representation of Republican values. And I appreciate that so much, right? I appreciate the fact that she's staying true to what it means to be Republican. And she's not just spewing hate or trying to just align with Trump, right? She's trying to say what true Republican values are. But that still leaves a tough position. I think that, you know, saying America is not a racist country right now isn't the best timing. But with that being said, I still think that she did a phenomenal job. And she did a phenomenal job in the sense that she sounded like a strong, powerful, conservative woman who was representing the RNC. And I don't think, or the Republican Party, which is, I think, all that we can really ask for.
I 100% agree with you, Damon, on, well, not 100% on all the things, but I do agree with you that, she was an amazing speaker. I think just to kind of end us out, because we're cutting close on time here, but to end it out, I think Nikki Haley was talking about there's a difference between racism. And when you say racism, there is a very broad spectrum of racism. There's individual racism and there's institutionalized racism. Mm-hmm. And in America, you know, I might have an edge because, you know, I'm a white male, but I would argue that there's less institutionalized racism and more individual racism in America. Because if someone is individually racist, they don't represent the institution, but often the two can get confused.
I disagree with that, but I agree with you on the other front.
Go ahead, Will. I'll finish it out by kind of going back to what Damon was saying, is that yes, Nikki Haley is probably, I could argue, one of the most uniting faces and up and coming faces of the Republican Party at the moment. And I'll end with saying Haley 2024.
I think her and Tim Scott. I think that'd be great. Either one as vice or president would put up a good run. Varun, with that being said, though, you are having, I think, a little bit of mic buzz. Would you mind unplugging your mic and then plugging it back in, or your headphones? Either one.
Yeah.
Just to see if that solves the problem. It's minimal, but I just don't want to Don't want anyone getting upset. Yeah. Either way, on to the next topic, Will.
Sorry, I was taking a sip of my Powerade.
Yeah, no worries,
The next speaker I had out was Vernon Jones, who is a state representative of Georgia. And he's an African-American man, and he has been a lifelong Democrat. Mm-hmm. And this has been, he's been an odd man out. And he's been an odd man out in the Democratic Party because he has, I'd say, more conservative values. And he has, and he's an odd man out in the Republican Party because he's a Democrat. And he continues to say he's a Democrat. I think in the future we might see him hopping over to the right side of the spectrum. But I think right now, I think his speech was really good. And I think it highlighted a lot of things people don't think about. And that's the sense of the how a lot of Democrats kind of assume that they just get the black vote. Because I have a lot of quotes from him. And I think the one that he said that struck me the most, that I really resonated with the most, was, "The Democratic Party does not want black people to leave their mental plantation." And I thought about that, and I actually had to, I was watching it and I had to pause it. And I was like, wow, like I really thought about that. Cause you know, you think about how that quote is said, and it's like, he's relating almost what the Democratic Party is doing in the sense of pandering to slavery. And it's because I think these Democrats nowadays are saying that they don't have to work to earn the black vote. They just deserve it for no reason. And I also quoted him saying, as if pandering was enough to keep us satisfied, because it's just not. And I think we're in this point of American history where we're going to start seeing a lot more, we're going to start seeing a lot more minorities and African Americans especially switching over from the Democratic Party to be not like alt right, like that one Dave Chappelle skit, but I think we're going to start seeing a lot of minorities switching over to be more conservative. And I think it's because and I say Democratic Party, I don't mean the whole Democratic Party, but I mean a lot of Democrats just think they deserve the black vote just for pandering. And that's not how that should work. And I think that a lot of, you know, as we're bringing, like, as I want to phrase this, as the, and especially poor minorities and poor African Americans. So I think that as we bring more education to low income areas, I think that we're going to start seeing a rise of more free thinkers and less of the hive mind that is now the alt left. And I give it to you guys now.
I want to let you respond, Damien, before, because I have very, very strong opinions on this.
Yeah, I do as well, but I'd feel free to respond before. No, and probably no. Well, the Democratic Party, it's kind of odd. That's like me saying Mexicans hate white people and then being like, I don't hate white people and I'm Mexican. Doesn't make sense that you have a Democratic speaker saying that Democrats are horrible because he's a Democrat. It's redundant, and it's almost counterintuitive. Absolutely. That he's bashing his own party while still being affiliated with his own party. But nonetheless, that goes beyond any points that I have to say. Minorities vote Democrat on their own free will, and they always have. And actually, they haven't always had. They've voted Democrat since 1932. When FDR ran for the first time, and before that they voted Republican. And if you want to know why, it's because the values of the Republican Party have switched, and unfortunately they have maintained the same since about that era, and the black vote has stayed relatively the same since that era. I think that African American women are some of the most free thinkers, and to say that they are just subject to a hive mentality is disrespectful beyond belief. African American women have some of the highest voter turnouts, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. They have some of the highest voter turnouts, right? some Absolutely. Of the highest voter turnout. So you're going to tell me that these free-thinking, powerful women are subject to hive mentality? No, I'm going to tell you what these free-thinking African-American women see and then make their bases off. Obviously, in being free-thinking, I can't assume everything. I'm not in their shoes. But I can tell you that they see Donald Trump tweeting that they're going to let, you know, we're going to get rid of low-income housing. And they see, I need that low-income housing. I live in a Section 8 household, right? So when you have people living in Section 8 households, and then you have the Republican Party saying, yeah, let's get rid of those, how do you think that the minority is then going to be like, I like that idea. I like them taking away my house, right? So you're talking about them wanting the Democratic Party keeping them in shackles and chains, but yet the Democratic Party is the very same party that does provide low-income housing. You're talking about the Republican Party wanting to educate these minorities, and in becoming more educated, they're going to vote Republican, yet these Republicans are the ones that are taking away their education by taking away their low-income housing. Beyond that, the Republican Party has also taken away many, many things, including the Second Amendment from African-American voters, and they're not dumb. I think the African-American community is one of the most free-thinking communities, period. If you want to talk about hive mentality, you can talk about any other community. But you have to exclude the African-American community almost every time. It was Republican voters and it was Republican legislative leaders that wanted to ban light firearms. Light firearms are firearms used most predominantly by African-Americans, right? For self-defense. So why would you want to ban a form of firearm when you always claim to be the party that wants to defend the Second Amendment right? It's almost as if a community that you've been disenfranchising for the past, I don't know, 100 years maybe uses that firearm to defend themselves, and then you picture it as they're using it to commit black-on-black crime, which isn't true. Light firearms, once again, are used for self-defense and are firearms, not guns. The differentiating factor being that guns are weapons that are used to kill people, and firearms are weapons that are used for self-defense. That are used, you know, guns are used for violence, firearms are used for self-defense. I don't think that you're ever going to see, as long as we have this value of the Republican Party, I don't think that you're ever going to see a switch from minorities voting Republican. And to finish off my point, the reason that minorities vote Democrat is because they can relate to the Democratic Party, because the Democratic Party has been relating to them. The reason that the Democratic Party feels like they have their vote guaranteed, it's because when you do something for someone, if I were to treat Varun right, I would expect Varun to treat me right. The Democratic Absolutely. Party has shown the utmost respect in every single manner, including legislation, including, I don't know, maybe giving condolences to grieving families after they're subject to police brutality to these communities, right? Whereas being said, if you are doing things for the communities, you should have the vote guaranteed. And that's why they do have the vote guaranteed. That's why I think it was, what, 96% of African Americans voted for Hillary? Or it wasn't it like 98% of African American women?
The women, yes. I don't believe that African Americans especially voted completely for Hillary. It was a huge minority,
but
there's a lot more for Biden. I think
the Biden turnout right now is like 96, isn't it, for the African-American community
Absolutely.
As a whole?
Yeah. It's absolutely insane. Yeah,
so again, that's why they feel like they have the vote guaranteed. Now I don't think that, you know, saying if you don't vote Democrat, you ain't black is necessarily right.
No.
But I also don't think that the Democratic Party has slept. I don't think that they have slept on the representation of the African American community. I don't think that they're just like sitting there and saying, yeah, the black votes are going to come either way, kind of like Hillary did with the swing states. I think on the contrary, they know that they have the black vote guaranteed and they're still advocating for it. But go ahead, Brian.
Yeah. I like it. That's what I wanted to hear from you first. I think you brought up almost every single point I wanted to bring up. I think I do agree that as a Democrat, he shouldn't be referring to Democrats in saying the Democrats want this, the Democrats want that, because I think that the goal of Vernon Jones being there was to compare to John Kasich on the Democratic side for, I think, the first night he spoke. The difference there was that John Kasich, first of all, spoke for, I think, 2-3 minutes in a non-live setting. But the other difference was that John Kasich talked about real hard reasons for why his party was betraying him. But he didn't say the Republicans betrayed me. He said, my party, as in like he loves his party and he wants to revive it as much as anybody else would. I think Vernon Jones in his speech really obliterated that complex. And he said something along the lines of, I don't associate with this party whatsoever. And I am not a Democrat, which is the issue because he is in name a Democrat. And I don't know if you saw, but he actually resigned from his position after the speech as a House of Representatives member for Georgia. But the issue is that he always referred to Democrats in the third person sense. And that was the other issue I saw with it. I think that if he did mention them as my party and a party that I love, he would have gotten more traction, but he never mentioned that. The other issue I saw with it is that he completely downplayed the violations upon the Black community. He blamed the Democrats for every single, I believe, violation, placing them in a mental plantation, as you said. I don't believe that's true, Will. I don't believe that's true. I think Black people have every single mental, there's the same fortitude, the same capacity to think on their own as anybody else. The only issue I see right now is that they're disenfranchised by Republican precincts. That's exactly what's happening right now. They're being disenfranchised by these ID voter ID laws. And that's the only issue I see with preserving Black thought. And that's not Democrats doing it. I don't think it's many Republicans, but some of them are doing it. You know, that's the real issue, gerrymandering, things like that. It's really restricting their thought, and same with Latino communities. I think he's making a completely false claim by saying that they're in a mental plantation, because that's simply not true in today's world. They can think how they want. And we see that today with the Black Lives Matter protests, with March these rallies Washington. Outside. March on Washington today. That happened. We saw on yesterday that the Trump speech, we had Black Lives Matter protesters outside of the speech on the other side of the White House. We see the most African-American thought being spread out today than basically ever. I this is in my lifetime, which has been a short lifetime. I've seen the most free thought being exhibited in our nation today, whether it be left or right. We've had free thought from minorities. And I think that we can't undercut that by saying that people are brainwashed, because they're really not. You can say Black people are brainwashed, but the real issue is that they're facing these problems. And it's not just Joe Biden saying these are your problems. They're facing them every single day. You saw a Bucks player being faced with, I think, a tasing incident for a minor traffic violation. You saw so many Black people in sports, in entertainment, in daily life. And I believe a lot of minorities have experienced this on a day-to-day basis. So you can't tell a Black person they haven't experienced racism. You can't tell a Black person that they're being brainwashed, because they have lived their life. They're not just listening to somebody saying something. They've lived through racism and discrimination in America, and they're fed up with it. I think it's shortcutting it completely.
I can resonate with some of the things you said. I think that Vernon Jones inspired quite a lot of anti-Biden sentiment, because Joe Biden, if you look at his history and you look at, you know, how Black voters have been, you know, they've been more likely to vote for him. And I think that when you show Biden those stats and you say, all right, you're more likely to get Black votes, I think he's more inclined to say things that just because he thinks he can get the vote. And I think that that's a personal issue with Biden. I think there's definitely a lot of pandering that goes on, as we saw with the, after George Floyd's death, the wearing of the I don't remember what it's called, but it's the cloth that goes around your neck. It's from Africa, and you have a bunch of people in Congress wearing it, which is, it's not just pandering, it's cultural appropriation at its finest. And I think that as a whole, Democrats and Republicans included, we need to stop pandering to anyone in particular. We shouldn't pander to ethnic groups or racial groups. We need to pander to Americans. And I think that that's an issue that Joe Biden has struggled with. And we are, like, we've been talking about this for quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I'm going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know we wanted to talk about Tim Scott.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Here's my takeaways from what he said. He said that the election is about you and me. And he's a very relatable guy. And didn't you say, Vern, earlier when we were talking about Nikki Haley, you said Haley Scott 2024?
That was me. Or, that was me.
That was you, Damien. That was you, Damien.
Yeah, that was Damien. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said it would be a good race. I did not endorse Haley, and I did not endorse them in any fashion. I said that it would make an interesting race.
It would be. It would be. But
it won't happen.
His story is very interesting, and I think that he talked about, I think him as well as Nikki Haley talked about, you know, core Republican values, and he told his story. After his freshman year in high school, he failed most of his classes, and then he worked hard enough. He went to summer school and he graduated, and he was talking about his mentor, and he was talking about creating jobs. And he said, here's one of the quotes I got from him, is having a job would be a good thing, but creating jobs would be even better. And I think that says a lot about his policies as a senator and just him as a person overall. I don't want to go on forever, but I really didn't like his speech. And another quote I said where he was addressing cancel culture, I think it was a very mild like addressing towards cancel culture, and I think it was perfect. It wasn't to Nicholas Sandman or St. Louis Couple or whatever, but I think it was just perfect. And he said, do we want a society that breeds success or a culture that cancels anything that it even slightly disagrees with? So he's promoting diversity of thought. I don't know. I think you guys probably watched it, so I'm going to go hand it off to you guys.
Yeah. So go ahead, on the topic of cancel culture, me and Damien have believed in that for a very long time.
Hey, one second, Bruno. Do you have your mic plugged in?
I do. I do. I believe I do.
Can you check your Discord to see if it's picking up your mic?
Gotcha.
Yes, sir.
Am I better now? Or?
There you go. Yeah. All right. Awesome. Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cool. Sorry about that. I guess I didn't have my mic plugged in. Anyways, I think that me and Damien have talked a lot about cancel culture in the past, talked about our own takes of it. I don't agree with it. Mm-hmm. I don't. As a Democrat, I don't agree with it. I think it's not a Democratic idea, though. I think it is both sides, but Democrats do say it a little bit more so. I think that my take on what Tim Scott says, is my audio okay for you guys?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah,
perfect.
Oh, I can't hear you guys for some reason, but I'll continue to go ahead. Anyways, so what Tim Scott said was motivational. I think he was my favorite speaker by far in the entire first night of the RNC. It's because Tim Scott mentioned things that other Republicans were scared to mention. He mentioned his past, and more importantly, he mentioned the election and how we have a fair voting system. He wasn't scared to mention it. I believe he said that our voting system is perfect. We have a system that allows people to vote. I don't remember the exact quote. And after on CBS, he was like, yeah, I don't have a problem with mail-in voting, which is a complete 360 turn from what the president said earlier. So I respect him for going against his party and saying that, which is, in my opinion, pretty respectable. On the other hand, I think Tim Scott did have a lot of good points about first of all, cancel culture. And I'm forgetting my statement here, but I believe he talked about okay, I have a point. I'm going to mention it
was
later.
Was it the job creation
by any
chance?
I did like his statements. Oh, I can't hear you guys. Give me a second.
Okay.
I couldn't hear any of you. Now I can hear you.
You can. Okay, but yeah, your mic quality got worse. That's weird.
It got worse?
Yeah.
I'm just going to speak without my mic.
Okay, awesome, 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 awesome. No worries. Go ahead, though. Yeah. Was it job creation by any chance, the point that you forgot to bring up?
Yes, it was. It was. So what he said was that, I hope you guys can hear me. I'm kind of yelling over
here. Yeah, you're good. You're good.
But he said that Donald Trump has created jobs for African Americans and helped them in a lot of ways, which in a sense he was right, but he never mentioned the rhetoric of Donald Trump when he kept mentioning the rhetoric of Joe Biden. I think that if you mention the rhetoric of Joe Biden as gaffes against the African American community, you have to mention what Trump has said. And as a Republican, as a Democrat, it just has to be mentioned. You can't say the president is undefensible on this side. And I think that beyond that, it was a perfect speech. I think that Tim Scott was one of the most, as I said, motivational, one of the most beneficial speakers they had for the RNC. I think he was the face of the first night of the RNC, and I'll end on that. Now, one point I wanted to make before was that when you're talking about Republicans and supporting the Black community, you have to, and the pandering, you have to also talk about what they said in Congress. And one point I wanted to make was that Eric Swalwell, I believe, Representative Eric Swalwell, asked if any of his Republican colleagues on the Senate, on the House floor, could say unequivocally that all lives matter. And Matt Gaetz came up there and he said, "Can you say unequivocally all lives matter?" Sorry, I messed that up. So Eric Swalwell said, "Can you any of you say unequivocally that Black lives matter?" And Matt Gaetz said, "Can any of you unequivocally say that all lives matter?" And that stroked a weird tone in me, because I think it's very hard for Republicans to make the statement, the simple statement, that Black lives matter. And I think that's where some of the black voting goes, because Republicans don't ever mention the discrimination, the racism that goes on in our nation. Now, I think actually that Tim Scott did a great job of mentioning it. He mentioned his past, his upbringing, how he's experienced things like discrimination. But he also did mention what the Republicans have done for the African-American community, which I agree with. I'm going to say this. The Republicans have not done a bad job in creating jobs for the community economically, but I think they've done a bad job in allowing for discrimination to happen. They've done a bad job in the criminal justice system for African-Americans, and that's where I'm going to stand on that. But he mentioned the points which needed to be mentioned, and I think in terms of fact-checking, his speech was kind of impeccable. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to say this. The best speakers at the Republican National Convention were Republicans. Other than that, every other speaker was trash. What I mean by that is the best speakers were actually Republicans. Every other speaker was a Trumponian. And they were just sitting there trying to, you know, again, with all due respect to everyone, they were trying to suck up to Trump. And that's the ones.
I would have said it must work, but that's a good way to say it.
Yeah, the ones that were saying what they believed, they made good speeches. But on the front, with respect to Tim Scott, I think that he's a great person. But something that I want to say is, you know, you talked about it's good to have a job. What was the quote, Will? It's good to have a job. It's better to create them.
I guess, Will. Having a job would be a good thing, but creating jobs would be even better.
This reminds me of the proverb from the Bible that says, "Give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime."
That is now, exactly what I thought.
Now, here's the issue, though. Neither the Republican nor Democratic parties on either front, and I'd say the Republican Party is more subject to this, have taught the Black community how to fish. What do I mean by this? Maybe they give them jobs. Maybe the Democratic Party does give them more jobs than a Republican Party will. But I think that if you want to talk about a mental plantation, you have to talk about the plantation that is being created when your boss is white. And I don't mean this by saying that we shouldn't have white bosses, but I'm saying that we should have more Black people creating the jobs. We should have more minorities creating jobs, right? Because once you teach a minority how to create a job, he can bring his community up. If you have a community of entrepreneurs, then you have a community of a workforce, right? If you don't have entrepreneurs, then you have slaves. And what I mean by that is you have people working for people who do not meet their best interests. You have people, again, to state this and to try to form this in the best way possible, when you have a leader that is only looking out for himself and you have no other option but to follow him because he's paying you and he's the only job that's in your community and he's the only one that's hiring, what other choice do you have? Right? It doesn't matter if he's going to pay you $7 an hour or he's going to pay you $15 an hour. Right? That's the issue. You're giving them the jobs, but you're giving them the jobs as a white man. I want to see Black communities being taught financial literacy. And I don't want them being taught financial literacy so that they know how to invest in stocks and bonds. I want them taught financial literacy so that they know the risks that it takes to open a business, so that they know how to invest their money to become an entrepreneur, so that they understand what it is to uplift a community. I want something like the late great Nipsey Hussle, right? Man created shops in his hood where he's from.
Yeah,
he created
absolutely.
Job opportunities for people there. He might have been shot on his own block, but the issue was that those people that shot him were subject to the years and years and years of I mean to put it in the most appropriate terms possible, industrial racism. When you don't have jobs being created by your group, how are you gonna how am I gonna relate to someone that I can't understand, right? How am I gonna, I can't go give right now, you know, I can't go and understand the struggles right now of a disabled person. I can try to understand them. I can try to sympathize with them, but I will never be able to empathize with that person because I myself am not disabled, right?
Do you understand what I'm saying? I get you. And I think that that's been addressed by Democrats. We saw Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and Chuck Schumer actually unveil a law called the Minority Business Development Agency during the COVID-19 pandemic, which is going on still. But that was to help Black businesses and minority communities to really succeed during this time. Because right now, more than white businesses failing, it's Black businesses because they don't have the support they need. You know, a lot of money is being poured into these majority white businesses, but not enough attention to be giving towards these minority communities and these minority businesses, I think, Damien. And that's why this law, I think, is going to help a lot. And that ties along with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, I think if you want to look any further, you have to look at the top 10 richest men, right? You know, I think you have to go so far down to find, what is it? So it would be Warren Buffett probably at the top, or Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates. You have to go so far down the list to find an African-American person, right?
We'll go down the list of senators. We have 3 African-American senators in the U.S. Senate. 3. 1 Republican and 2 Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
But if
you look at the population, right? If you look at the population, in some communities, you'll find 70% of the population is white, but yet 50% of the, you'll say 70% of the population is white, but 70% of the impoverished community is minority. Why?
Yeah.
That's such an odd statistic. That's the disparity. But with that being said, I'm going to end my point. I think that Tim Scott did an amazing job. But I would like to see both parties come along. And I don't think that the Democratic Party is doing it enough.
No.
I think that both parties can do better.
I'll end on Tim Scott with 3 points. One, I agree with you, Damien. I agree with your sentiment about how we need more minority business owners, but we can't just, they have to want to create businesses. We can't just be like, here, go do this and then make them do that. Because just to say that we have more minority businesses, we have to actually, and this is what I was talking about. And I agree with it, but at the same time, it could be misconstrued saying that we need to go into these communities and teach them. It could, you know, it implies that they're uneducated. And in some communities,
they're highly uneducated. That's not.
And 20-40% of African Americans have been to jail, which means they're disenfranchised, don't have job opportunities, housing opportunities.
That's not racist.
The major issue I see happening.
It's not racist to say that they're uneducated. They are uneducated. It's not their fault. They're not uneducated because they're black. Here in Forsyth County, the dropout rate of the African American and white community is 5%. 5% of both communities drop out. However, when you look at the Hispanic community, it's 25%. That's not to say.
I think that we need to. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Going back to a point that we made in the ACAB podcast, the first one I was on, one of my solutions that I brought up was that we need to go into these communities and this is where we need to put our money. We need to offer tax breaks,
loans
to tax breaks or loans that can come in either way to, not just minority small businesses, but small businesses, because when you focus on, like, if you go to a community and, you know, there's 9 African-American families in a neighborhood and there's 1 white family, and then you go to all the African-American communities and say, here, you go start your own business. Here's some money to go start your own business. We can't just be, and I understand that there's a lot more African-Americans in poverty than there are white people, but we need to, as a government, you can't do that. You can't provide that discrimination towards one.
That's not discrimination.
Hold on, it is discriminatory
against a white family that is just as poor. And
I don't believe so.
As an African American, what privilege do they have? They're poor. They live in the same neighborhood, on the same street. They're poor. That's what we need to do, though. We need to go into these neighborhoods. We need to give them the money that they need to start their own businesses.
But we need to give the community the money that they need.
The fact of the matter is that it's not privilege because, as I said, 20 to 40% of Black people have been to jail. They've lost opportunities. That's the real issue. I think you have to put more funding into these communities because if you look at financial literacy statistics, there's more educated white people in financial literacy than there are Black people, and that's why they lose their money.
And funding doesn't.
You're right. Let me finish my point. Go ahead. Well, a poor white family does not deserve discrimination. But the fact of the matter is that the majority of white families have had more financial literacy training than have Black communities. That's what we need to target. I'm not saying.
But that's not my point. The point is, you live in the same neighborhood as an African American family. You go to the same schools. But how are you more inclined to have a better education when you go to the same schools? It's not because your skin color. Education is not hereditary. Like,
no, it is not because of
your hold on. Education.
Because some people don't have education.
Education is most definitely, in every sense, hereditary. In every sense, education is hereditary. And what I mean by this is if you grow up with parents that know how to deal with money, you're more than likely going to know how to deal with money.
If you grew up with parents whatsoever.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. But what we're saying here, Will, is it's not you need to go up to a Black man and ignore the white man in the community, right? If there's 9 out of 10 African-American people in a neighborhood or in one family's white, it's not about investing in those 9 families and leaving out that one family. Rather, it's investing in the schools that all 10 families go to, in the roads that all 10 families drive on, in the transportation that all 10 families take. It is not about an individual. We're talking about a community here. And in no respect have I ever said that we need to give reparations to African Americans. That's not the way to do it.
Of course not. No, that's not what I said. But I'm more general, a more accepting because this is how the government creates racist people. Is when you go to a government and you say, you know, kind of like the governor of, I think it was Kentucky, wanted to provide free healthcare for African Americans. Now you go to a poor family that lives in downtown Louisville, they don't have healthcare. They can't afford that. What do you think they think? Do you think that they're mad at the governor or do you think they're mad at the African Americans? I think they're mad at both. I think they're mad at both people. And that creates a sense of fostered racism that goes, and that is generational. Racism is generational. But education, I'm talking about these families that have been stuck in these poor, low-income areas, and they're, you know, pardon my language, but they ain't worth shit because they don't have any education. Their parents don't have any education. So, and all they want to do is provide for their children. So that's why I say hereditary, like, education is not real. Okay. It's not real.
Yeah.
And obviously, I don't mean that when I say they ain't shit, I mean that they don't have.
Yeah, no. We got you. We got you. We got you 1,000%.
Yeah, let him continue.
I shouldn't have said it like that.
No. It was completely understanding. Trust me. We got you 1,000%.
I think, you know, as we're approaching, you know, the end, we've been talking. I think this might be one of our best conversations yet. We're approaching about 18 minutes. Yeah. But I think that this Tim Scott conversation was probably the best we've had, in my opinion. I think it fostered a lot of conversation. But just to end on that, kind of like what Damon had said earlier, yes, Tim Scott is very moderate Republican. I think that he's very appealing to.
I don't think he's moderate Republican. I think that he's just a Republican.
I think he's a good Republican.
I think that he's just a Republican.
A conservative.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's actually conservative. That's the difference.
I think he's a very good Republican. And I think that he, I mean, not that I'm worth anything, not that I'm worth shit, but I give him my endorsement because I think he'd be a great president. We don't have a lot of time left. I would like to briefly touch on one of my other favorite speakers, Madison Cawthorn. And this might be enough to spark a conversation for another time, but he was he's a Republican nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives, North Carolina, District 11. And he was in a car accident when he was 18.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he was depressed. He was suicidal. And he went from, you know, depressed and suicidal to a motivational speaker to now the nominee for the 11th district in North Carolina, which he's probably going to win. But he did not. He was not what I thought he was going to be. I thought he was going to be all Second Amendment, all when I was taking my notes, he had a country exterior but a moderate interior. And I think that's very appealing to a lot of Republicans, is because, you know, the country exterior, you might look at him and be like, that looks like someone I would vote for. And those are the I'm gonna probably insult some Republicans, but that's what the smaller minded people will think. But then when you look at what he was saying, he's such a good voice for young people to listen to. Yeah. I think that, like, you know, that's why he became a motivational speaker. He is good. That is what he does for a living. I think that he's going to go pretty far in politics. I'd like to see him in the Senate, hopefully soon, after he's been in the, after he's established a presence in the House. But he promoted a lot of working together. And he also talked about cancel culture in the sense, but he said, here we will have freedom of speech, not freedom from speech. And I'll ask what you guys thought about that in a second, but I would like to end what I was thinking about him on the fact that I think he had the most genuine moment of the entire Republican convention.
Yeah.
Is when, even though he needed two guys to help him do it, he still stood up. He stood up and he honored the flag.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to do that. He didn't have to. But he did. And I think it was moving. It was very moving.
Yeah.
I was very moved by when he did that. I think that I'm rooting for him. I hope that he goes really far in the U.S. politics. But I'll leave it to you guys as we wrap up the show, just to get a final perspective on Madison Cawthorn.
I don't have much to say, Will. I think he had a good speech. I think he was a motivational speaker, as he was. I think he made some good points. I think obviously the most motivating point was him standing up from his wheelchair. I saw that as well, standing up for the flag. That was motivating. I think that it really does appeal to Republicans. I think people like that definitely have some kind of appeal to Republicans. That's where Trump's going to get his votes. It's because patriotism is what he should be pulling on. He did pull on, but that was one of the most patriotic moments I've seen. And I think that's what's going to gain Republican votes. I watched a brief overview of that speech, not the whole thing, obviously. But I think it was a good speech. I don't have any problems with what I've seen. And I'll leave it off to Damian.
Yeah, I think there was three good speeches, and I think we talked about all of them. I think that Melania Trump's speech was decent. I think that Trump profoundly accepting the nomination was pretty cool. Profoundly, again, accepting the nomination.
And pioneering fatalities. That's
fatalities.
I didn't watch that whole speech. I watched bits and pieces of that.
Yeah, he said profoundly instead of proudly accept the nomination. But
He was doing it very outwardly, I guess. Or...
Yeah, extremely. He was extremely, I extremely accept your nomination. In my best grammars possible.
Let me say this. In the words of Stephen Colbert, he was killing off his voters. The 1,500 in the stands.
Well,
who had no social distancing or masks.
Yeah. And with that being said, to wrap up the RNC, the DNC won. I think that the RNC had one, maybe two good nights. I think there was one, maybe two nights that it actually drew attention. I think that it was almost, you know, with all due respect, obviously, to Jacob Blake, but, like, it was almost purposeful, like, the time of him getting shot, right? It's almost like these police were like, we know Trump's about to have his RNC. It's so coincidental. It overshined the RNC. I think my highlight of the RNC was, I think it was Eric Trump speaking to Dad. He's like, Dad, I want to talk to you. It's like, well, okay, we don't have to listen to that. It was a very awkward moment. It was extremely awkward. Like, he was talking to his father in front of us. He was like, I loved working with you and I miss you. And Dad, please talk to me. We haven't talked in like 5 years. Either way, Either way,
I think I like the SNL portrayal of Eric Trump.
I did not see it. I literally just have my own opinion. I haven't watched any media. I just watched literally the RNC. I don't have I haven't watched any bias implicit. I just thought it was funny. I don't know. Did SNL do it?
Watch SNL. Watch Stephen Colbert.
That's hilarious. I didn't even know that either one of them mentioned it.
It's liberal, but it's funny. Go ahead.
I think
SNL didn't. But SNL's passed.
I got you. I think that the RNC was a letdown for Republican voters. I think that it was a big turn up for Trump voters, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I think that I'd
actually like to comment on that when you're done.
Yeah, for sure.
We can all comment.
I think that it was that's what it was. I think that it was a good great show. It was a show. That's what it was. It was a great show for Trump voters. It was a bad presentation for those Republican hopefuls. I think the Lincoln Project just got a whole lot of material. I think that Republican voters against Trump just got a whole lot of material. I think that Media Touch just got a whole lot of material. I think this is just the last point that I kind of want to touch on. I think it's funny that throughout, I don't know how many times it was said, you won't be safe in Joe Biden's America. Look what's happening in Portland, look what's happening in Wisconsin. It's like, dude, this is Donald Trump's America. Like, what do you mean you won't be like, it doesn't make sense. It kind of goes back to the Democratic Party hates you. Trust me, I'm Democrat. It's like, that doesn't make sense. Like, why are you saying that you won't be safe in Trump's America or in Joe Biden's America when in Trump's America I can't even go to Walgreens without a mask on? They use footage from Trump's America to be like, this is what Joe Biden's America would look like.
Well, no, they didn't actually, Damien. I'm gonna actually correct you. These footage from Spain.
Oh, God.
In their ads, there was footage from Spain.
Yeah, but you can replace Biden's it with America. You can replace it with footage from
you can
Donald Trump's America. But there has been ads.
Arguably worse.
There has been ads from Trump that depict Donald Trump's America. So either way, I think that round one. I don't know. I guess I'm gonna break this up in rounds. I don't know if there's gonna be debates, but I'd consider this the first debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, and I think that round one goes to Joe Biden.
I will agree with you. Yeah, I think that the RNC had, had some really strong speakers.
As do I.
Talked about today. The DNC just won. They won the conventions. I don't think that means they've won the election, though. I think that means that we're going to have a lot to look forward to in the debates. And if you're Nancy Pelosi, you don't want to have debates at all, which is something she actually said.
Yeah, no. I think if you're Joe Biden, you don't want to have debates. Why would you want to? You're winning by 13 points.
Plus, you're not the best debater, to be honest.
Exactly. That's very true.
Well, I mean, Trump's not the best debater. Neither one of them. It would be horrible. But I think that you don't want to go up there and slip up and then lose votes when you're winning.
No, of course not.
I think the less you can talk, the better.
I think one debate, one Biden slip up. I don't care if he says something about Native Americans. There's 2 million of them in the country. I don't care if he says something about Native Americans. He has one slip up. The election's gone for him. And I think that's why Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, I think that's why they don't want debates. But I think that, this country is built on conversation. I'll end with this. The country is built on conversation. So I think it's essential and necessary for our two leaders, or our leader and then our could possible future leader, to debate. I think we need it in this country.
Yeah. All right. And to end here really quickly, I think Damien, the Jacob Blake getting shot and Kyle Rittenhouse shooting two people, was shooting three people actually, was not coincidental. I think it happens. Well, we've seen 12 days in the past year, I believe, only 12 days that a black person has not got shot by police. That's the deaths. And that's the real hard fact. It's not coincidental because I think I predicted something like this was going to happen because it happens almost every single day. And that's the issue with Donald Trump's America. And I'm going to end there. I think the DNC was better. And I'm not saying that because I believe so personally, which I do, but not just that. The ratings from 4 years ago for the RNC were better. Ratings from the DNC were better than the RNC this year. So the stats definitely show it. So I think there's no question about that. I think, as you said, we mentioned every single good speaker they had. I think Trump did a decent job. Had some gaps here and there, but he stayed on script for most of the speech. The 1 hour and 10 minutes he did speak. And I'm going to end there. I think this episode was super, super emotional. I loved it, Will. Always love having you on to the podcast, my guy. And I think that we can end it here. And it was a great episode. Make sure to go to www.polititeampodcast.com for more information. Peace out, guys. Peace out.
Thank you for tuning in. And as always, be sure to tune in this Monday for our next episode. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Polititeen Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/Polititeen Podcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is, once again, www.patreon.com/Polititeen Podcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/Polititeen Podcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.polititeenpodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damien, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Polititeen. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing conversation, my friend. I do appreciate your input, as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.